This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake Them Ropes, Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino. Bit of a warning for those of you. I still give the warning for the one person who I know listens to this with kids in the car. We are going to
don't know how you're going to do that with this episode.
We're going to be talking about adult situations. Chris may get involved with some partial nudity. I don't know, but
I should hope not. I'm really trying to keep things right this time.
It's going to be a PG-13 conversation today. So earmuffs for the kids, or maybe better not, just put it in the minivan today. Let's start with some fun and frivolity first. Chris, you told me right before I hit record, you're watching The Renegade.
Look, every so often.
Why not Mongo?
I was doing that. Because like my Wrestling Digest, when we're not watching stuff for the show, is I just go and watch old archival WCW from like 88 to 96, a little bit before my time, and like right in kind of the peak young Chris watching pro wrestling stuff. It's like, look, there's always a Bobby Eaton match is sort of my mantra. Bobby, you can always watch Bobby Eaton doing something cool that you haven't seen before. Like this week, I watched a really good match between him and Stunning Steve Austin in 91, where Steve Austin could really go and he was really mobile. And Bobby Eaton's a really great foil for him. And you're like, oh, wow, Bobby Eaton's great. But Saturday night, I was a bit wiped out from moving somebody yesterday. And I got home, and things got a little silly, and I might have fired up the old YouTube, and I watched some, like, summary of the Renegade's career, and I was like, oh, yeah, the Renegade. And then I went and looked up old Renegade matches, and because someone said on one of these videos I was watching that the Renegade was about as good as the Ultimate Warrior in the ring. And I am here to tell you, Jeff, I'm here to tell you, he is slightly better.
Wait, no, the Ultimate Warrior slightly better or the Renegade?
The Renegade, because he can do a top rope splash. Like the Renegade can do a handspring back elbow. The Ultimate Warrior could not do a handspring back elbow.
I give Ultimate Warrior credit for working in world class for a while. So
I'm not saying who's the better talent or like who's the better overall package. Obviously the Ultimate Warrior, even if the Renegade came first, the Ultimate Warrior would still be better, because like Jim Hellwig had like the better body. The Gorilla Press Slam looked awesome. His version of the entrance was dynamic. The dude was like pure energy. He just couldn't put it together in the ropes. All I'm saying is there's no way Jim Hellwig ever has the discipline to learn how to do a handspring back elbow.
I watched Battle of the Belts 3 last night from 1986. Main event Luger versus Flair, 2 out of 3 falls.
Ooh.
Which turned out to be a draw somehow.
Lex always finds a way.
Well, this was, this is 86. So this is shortly before, this is while he's still in Florida. And right before he's meant to go up to NWA, Big Boy in Charlotte. favorite match out of there was a young Muda as the Ninja versus Tim Horner, who Tim Horner from 1982 to 1994, I think, had the same gimmick of young up and comer Tim Horner, and everybody passed him by. Like, I remember there was a squash in Mid-South I watched from like 1983, I think, of Martin Lundy versus Tim Horner, where Horner was going over at the time. You know, Tully Blanchard versus Tim Horner, where Tim Horner goes over, and then they both go to Charlotte and make lots of money, and Tim Horner's still working that gimmick through Smoky Mountain. So
that's nice to get those protected wins.
Okay.
Another thing that I've gotten into in the retro thing is the Mulkey Brothers.
Oh, they're great.
I have a thing for watching the Mulkey brothers get the tar kicked out of them.
Oh, they're so great. I mean, if you want to watch people die every week, the Mulkey brothers are for you. And then you have to finish it with the Crockett Cup qualifier against the quote unquote gladiators, who I believe are Gary Royal and George South under.
This is where the Mulkeys get the win, right?
Yes, where they get the win, and Mulkey Mania runs wild. Yes, that's a must. All right, heavy stuff time. he says with a nervous chuckle. Hashtag speaking out. Started with a young woman who had had a relationship with David Starr. I had known that he had cheated on her. I've met her once or twice. Her name's Tori. She's very nice. She wouldn't know me from Adam, but I've met her. And then allegations that it was just more than cheating. It was mental abuse, some sexual assault in there, and then it all went, started rolling from there, and it's really rocked UK wrestling. A lot of NXT UK talents involved in this, a lot of indie talents still on the indies, still Joey Ryan, Liguero, Jack Gallagher is the one axe to fall, I guess, because he's been fired from the WWE. A couple of stories about him, one involving alcohol and doing horrible things, and then another being kind of a jerk in the ring with, I believe, a member of the opposite sex putting a chokehold on her, which is just inexcusable. You know, most of NXT UK, I mean, you have Travis Banks, you have Joe Coffey, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven have been named a couple times, but, you know, who knows? Where to start with this, Chris? I will let you go first. I have some thoughts that I'll try and frame this as, but I'll let you go.
Well, I guess what I will say as a general thing is that I don't like talking about any one of these stories as a general thing. I think that it's important for all parties involved for each one of these stories to get looked at with specificity. So if we want to start first with the David Starr story, what are the specific physical allegations against him?
There's one where while they were in a relationship, she was drunk and he had sex with her when she didn't want to. That's one of them. There's also, let me get this up, but I know that there's a lot of
the big thing that stuck out for
manipulation
me too,
was a big part of this as well.
I think a big part of this that I always find myself going to is I'm looking at rightly or wrongly. I seem to really be taking a look at the party's response to this, and I found David Starr's response to this to be unsettling at best, because it was like, I want to make sure I get the language right, or at least do a reasonable approximation thereof, but it was, let's be clear, I am not a sexual offender, or I'm not a sexual abuser, but, and whenever I see that as the opening salvo, it lets you know that this person is aware that they've got a bunch of aberrant behavior buried in there. And it leads me to believe generally that perhaps you might be getting off easy here, that there's one of these stories and that perhaps there's more to come, or there would be more to come if we were going to put a finer point on it.
Yeah, there. Well, I mean, for the David Starr thing, there's a rape allegation. There's a pressuring women into having sex.
There we go. Yeah, I knew there was more than just the having sex when drunk thing. I thought it was more weighty than that.
Yeah. No, and also just cheating on every woman you ever date with, which is the least of the problems in my opinion.
Cheating on everybody that you ever date with is not a laudable behavior, and I'm pro monogamy and everything like that. But that's a personal grievance thing. I have been cheated on. It doesn't give me the right to go and go, hey, you know who's a cheater, and name names. Like, that's weird. But the sexual assault stuff, of course, absolutely.
Yeah. And this goes into I mean, what has happened is we keep rolling downhill. Hill is not just wrestling related. It's office politics related. It's training schools and things of that nature. And for me, the big problem here is that wrestling has a four-way intersection where this crap is going to happen in one of the sectors. Let me bring up another thing real quick before I go into my monologue, so to speak. AEW also affected by this because Jimmy Havoc has been accused of some wrongdoing, and their response to it wasn't great either, in that it's the old, he's gone into rehab.
Yeah, that was very, it was a weird non sequitur where it's like, Jimmy Havoc's in rehab right now, and to which I go, okay, but if he went into rehab because of the drug problem, and even if you want to link his abusive and aberrant behavior in other facets of his life to the fact that he's abusing drugs right now and he's not in his right mind, that's fine, but no one else working for you should have to be around someone who has those kind of problems, or feel uncomfortable around someone or another performer. I think wrestling is such an intimate activity. And the, you have to trust each other so implicitly that I think when that trust is broken in any way, shape or form, it's utterly appropriate for an organization to cut ties.
Right. And this seems like almost, all right, get off our backs. We put them in rehab. Don't look at us. Don't look at anybody. And we have signed because we're trying to skate through this without getting any harm to us.
Yeah. Keep focusing on WWE, please. Yeah. If you don't mind,
focus on those indie workers. Don't come to us. We're handling our business.
They're okay at this. They're pretty good at this little move, but I think people are going to start catching on eventually.
And here is, I mean, before we go into even further specifics, because I'd say this even started with the Velveteen Dream stuff, where he's absolutely texting photos of himself to, I guess, 15-year-olds.
And you and I felt, you know, we're fairly, I'll pat us on the back. I thought we were fairly even-handed about this, but I think our conclusion was you have to end the push with this guy. You absolutely can't keep moving forward with the push with this guy.
Oh, you have to fire him until the court, or until the legal system has gotten through with him. Right.
No, I mean, there's a cloud over this dude's head. He can't be a part of your television product. That's what I was finishing the sentence off today.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Illegal stuff. That's a, I mean, that's not he said, she said. That is break the law, bring in authorities. You're not coming into work until this stuff is dealt with.
Dream's contention, which I do not believe, is that it's not him on those recordings.
Okay, now do the photos. And that's fine. You know what? If he's cleared of it, come back. I'm good with that too. I really am. If you're cleared of charges, and I know that's a slippery slope because, well, if somebody decides, well, I don't want to really ruin his life, so I'm going to drop the charges type thing. I get that there's that happening, but you have to take this at face value and say, okay, if you're clear of the charges, we'll reconsider. Maybe not come back, maybe you won't be welcome back with open arms, but we'll reconsider. I'll take that. But
I find the Gallagher example really interesting too, because it seems based on their statement, WWE statement, when they released Gallagher, that they have some sort of private detective team that can look in and do some sort of independent verification on this. And as they say in that second paragraph, they don't have to wait around on process if they don't want to, if they have good, compelling evidence. And so, I just find this even more maddening in the context of all these other stories, because it's like, well, then put your private investigation team on this and get to the bottom of this. They could be taking this seriously.
Yeah, I brought this up to you when we were talking about it and trying to gather our thoughts. There's a lot of, if anybody's ever watched the old 70s football movie North Dallas 40, there's a lot of that going on where you have an investigator looking in the players kind of thing to, in case anything bubbles up, the management knows about it before it happens. Because there was, I forgot who it was, there's a story of someone who went to Vince with things that were alleged, and they basically looked at him and goes, oh, we knew about it. We investigated. There's nothing to it. And that's a little spooky. You know, you know stuff before even I can come and bring it up to you type of thing.
It also is a weird veiled threat in the sense that what you're saying, we have private investigators and they could be looking into you, Pally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what it was in North Dallas 40 was they were looking for reasons to void contracts. So, you know, oh, we saw that you were doing pot with, I was with this. Shut up! I was doing it with this player and the wife of someone else of the team present. Yes, but you were doing it, so you're in the wrong. So we're gonna void your contract because we have a morals clause in it or whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to this thing, and
it's been such a like raft of stories that. I mean, we tape on the weekend, so we had to tape, but I would absolutely love, if I was doing my other show, I would totally have all this stuff on a notepad and, like, spend a day or two just kind of connecting it to see kind of what my general theme is. The UK scene seems to keep coming up, though. So, like, I'm not as well-versed on, you know, kind of UK wrestling culture or whatever, but is there anything that accounts for this?
I don't know. I don't know enough about their training. I don't know enough about, you know, the social scene there. I can't comment on that per se.
All I can do is comment on my observation. I don't know enough. I don't know enough to take it deeper than that, but that does kind of stick out to me that like, it's not like America is free of this problem, but like, man, you really saw a deluge of stories coming out of the UK here. And not great.
Well, let me lay out the grid here and I'll let you knock away at any of the logic of it or anything. There's a personal aspect to this and then there's just general aspects to it. And I'll lay out the general first. Professional wrestling is full of carny creeps. We get that even as far back as the territory days. Look, there was a lot based on sex. In this industry, it is a cosmetic business. The Von Erichs were not loved for their particular wrestling acumen. There were a lot of women who wanted to sleep with the Von Erichs. And when you went to shows in the 80s, you kind of knew who the women were who wanted to sleep with Ricky Morton in the audience. You kind of knew were there to see the cute guys. And, you know, and plus just the carny aspect of taking advantage of people, taking advantage of fans. Things of that nature. You have another sector of the jockocracy, which is, you know, high school locker room crap, which goes on with men where sexual conquest.
The abusive stuff, too, the sexual conquest. Yes. But, like, I was just talking during the move here yesterday, we were talking about JBL, and we got onto a big conversation about how JBL was a classic locker room bully. And I think that that's definitely a factor here.
Definitely. The third part of this is the training part of it. You have mentor-student relationships. You have basically a lot of teachers who are like, it's the whole, hey, new crop of students, new crop of women or men that I can hit on here, you know, so I don't have to go out and date because my life is this thing that I'm training. And we had this issue in improv a few years ago where a bunch of artistic directors and teachers were called out for pervy practices and sexual abuse and things like that. And just even if it works out, even if you have the best relationship possible, it still leads to issues down the road because you have, you know, internal politics of work. Like for example, in the improv community, you know, if one person is dating someone who is high up in the theater or whatever, that person will get more opportunities because we want to keep that other person happy. So it just complicates things on that level as well. But but it still opens itself to misuse and misdeeds by people taking advantage of the mentor student situation. Oh, come here. I'll guide you. I'll show you the ropes. Put your arm around her. You know, if she's frustrated, you know, there's ways to manipulate that.
It's real simple. Anytime there's a power dynamic where yes. one party has more power in an environment, whether it's at an office or an improv theater or in the White House, wherever, like, then it's inappropriate for these two people to have a relationship. Like, with all other things moved entirely to the side. One party has more power than the other in some sort of ordinate, subordinate way. Then it's just inappropriate for those two people to have a party. What's been very weird is I've worked in a number of places where, like, one of my old jobs, there was a situation where a manager was in a relationship with, like, the supervisor of all managers. Mm-hmm. And, like, everyone knew don't step with we'll call him M. Don't step to M, because if you do that, then S, his significant other, will come in and she will make your life hell. But yeah, like, these relationships and these dynamics are always bad. And one other thing I'd add on to what you're saying is that I think lack of employment opportunities is part of the problem here. For the last 20 years or so, there has been a real pyramidal, I don't know why I said it like that, but a pyramid-like structure to the way wrestling works, where you have the indies, which serve as a feeder system to, you know, TNA and Ring of Honor and some of these lower tier organizations. No knock on them, but you're all of these wrestlers ultimately are thinking about making a WWE run, or if they're a little bit more artistically inclined and a little bit more physically endowed, going over to New Japan and testing their mettle and doing really big long form matches. But the money is in WWE. And I think having a really narrow system like that, which is kind of like Los Angeles comedy scene, in the sense that, like, you're getting fed into a more and more narrow band that all the gigs are in Los Angeles, right? Like, it's not like you're training in Los Angeles so that you can go make your big money out in Seattle, Washington, or something like that.
Right.
The opportunities are in Los Angeles and to a lesser extent in Chicago and New York City.
Yeah, and the fourth part of my grid is the show business aspect. You have the fan adulation, celebrity power dynamic as well. So, I mean, between all this, I mean, my ground rules for personal conduct are: don't sleep with coworkers, don't sleep with trainees, don't sleep with fans. I know
that is a really good takeaway, I think, for a lot of performers here, is that you can also be part of this inappropriate power dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see when you get into that, though, you get into shaming people for putting themselves in a situation where conduct was done to them. And I don't want that to come off at all in this discussion. It's more of a responsibility of the person with the power. I mean, look,
the person with the power has the responsibility. Yes. And so you can, I mean, you know, like, for objective, neutral, vacant vessel performer X can be abused while at training school and then get into a relationship with a fan and they are the abuser there. They can both be the victim and the abuser. Yeah. As they say, hurt people can hurt people. And so, like, I think it can be both things, but what needs to happen is people need to be mindful that these power dynamics exist all over the place. And I think, you know, part of it is that wrestling and also work environments and, like, a lot of other things have been sort of blissfully ignorant of the real nature of how power works for a very long time.
Yeah. And there's the whole, for me, there's the whole, look, part of being a better person is having restraint over your emotions and your urges. And as look, I'm going to go into weird male female dynamics here that a lot of people, you know, think are old fashioned, but as men, you do have a certain responsibility to both lead and protect. And it's not just about, hey, I want to get laid, or what about my, you know, what about my emotional needs and crap. Look, dude, Look, you can't sleep with everything that moves. You can't, you know, you can't use people. They're not your personal playground. Okay. And just because you have wants and needs doesn't, relationships are for adults, they're not for children. And if you're an emotional child, don't go into them. I mean, that's, I hate to put it that bluntly, but.
Well, I think it's, I mean, what you were saying earlier, using people to meet your needs, especially when it gets kind of that base, it's inherently an exploitative dynamic. You can, you know, put whatever philosophy or drape whatever on top of it you want. But, you know, if people are serving a need sufficing role in your life as a primary function, and really anyone could do it, provided they were willing to, like, that's, it's not a great scenario to be in. That certainly smacks of exploitation.
And then there's the whole other level of just plain vile, evil stuff. I don't care if it's technically legal to date a 17-year-old, which apparently it was in the UK, depending on the situation. But
who are we referring to here?
Travis Banks.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah. You know. Right. I'm living in the South here, in Texas. Right now, Dallas, COVID capital of America. Not quite yet. Getting there. But like, I lived in Arizona too, where statutory rape laws were really lax, shall we say. But look, dude, 15, 20 years ago, and even before that, I mean, going back to, you remember that election for senator in Alabama? Like, everybody knows it's not appropriate to have relationships with this sort of dynamic. Even the law is not the final arbiter on what is and is not right.
And the Velveteen Dream, the Velveteen Dream stuff just really bugs me if it's him. It really does. That's just, it's a bridge too far.
Oh yeah, sure. Sure. But I mean, and that gets into, the Justin Roberts stuff, unless those texts are fake, I found those really like unpleasant and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, like, because, you know, that kind of gets into that pressure / exploitation thing where it's like, well, I'd really like to see some photos. You want to just maybe send me some photos? Like, that's very unpleasant. Beyond very unpleasant, it's gross. I'm trying to keep the show family friendly. I don't know why. We said it was going to be PG-13.
Yeah,
I feel bad about dropping F-bombs on this show for whatever reason.
After a certain age, you can't be 23 and doing that crap, you know?
Yeah, it's so I was 29. Always taught half plus seven, yeah. Which I think maybe is a good rule for some of these performers if you have an eye that drifts younger.
Oh, jeez. And that's, you know, that's the other... the Leonardo DiCaprio creepy aspect of it, where it's like, well, she just jokes were flying fast and furious of, well, girlfriend just had her 23rd birthday. This is it. Gonna age out on that one. You know, that whole celebrity, there's always a younger model aspect to it. It's sexual dynamics are complicated enough without bringing in the fact that people aren't good communicators.
That this is a nomadic business that attracts a certain personality type that is naturally attracted to some degree of instability. So I was seeing Rich or Joe, I'm not sure who was on the Voices of Wrestling account when they were talking about this, but
that'd be Joe, I think.
One of them said, it's time to do away with training children. And I think that's absolutely right. Is there a way you could train some kid and get them ready? Sure. And I believe that there's an exceptional case or whatever, ultimately saying no training of children doesn't mean absolutely no children will be trained ever again. I'm sure the really exceptional ones who want to get in the ring the third generation wrestler will get the training they need if that seems right for them. But we need to stop getting kids off the street who are like 14 or 15 year old and, you know, getting him into a ring somewhere downtown and getting training on wrestling.
You know, just the general waiver of there has to be an adult in the room that is related to that person at all times.
Sure.
That would be my go around for that one, because part of this problem is that you parents have to leave now and I'm going to be alone with the kids, or you drop them off like it's, you know,
karate class.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. No, you people need to be in there. Teachers need to have background checks done.
And teachers probably need some supervision, like the parents being in there and watching the training probably would be a good thing.
Yeah. And really having a sit down between the teacher and the instructor as to, hey, this is simulated violence. Because I could see some parents just watching and go, oh my God, I don't want my kid doing that.
And also your kid's probably going to take a forearm or two to the face.
Yes.
And so you want to prepare the parents for that. But at the same time, it's like, we've been getting kids in football programs for years here. I'm not super worried, but yeah.
On the whole, I am in agreement with minors. You know, you should be 18 to be able to say, hey, I want to take a wrestling class. I'm good with that.
It seems like a good practice. And then, I mean, in terms of fixing this more broadly in the industry, this is where it's important to have organizations that are absolutely clear about what their policies are on this stuff. And I would even say organizations that err on the side of caution, especially when you have an issue like the wrestling industry has had for not just like this year, not just like the past decade, but for 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, go and read these old wrestlers' biographies and you hear lots of allegations of sexual assault, liberties taken in the ring, all these sorts of things. Organizations need to make it clear that those days are over. And so that involves WWE creating a department, laying off some people who might have been problem figures in the past when it comes to this stuff. They won't do that. I have no delusions of that.
You know what?
But did it with AEW as well. I think that like all of these organizations, sorry, I just want to finish the point here.
No, you're good.
I think they all need to set up a department that handles these things and make it clear a new sheriff has come to town and that behavior such as this is not going to be tolerated.
You mean like a human resources department, Chris?
I hate, but like honestly, a very narrow human, like an adjunct to the human resources department, kind of like, you know, like what WWE, you know, we're speculating, their secret police, their secret private investigators. I mean, look, if you told me that there were secret police making sure the talent weren't doing inappropriate things, especially when you're paying them hundreds of thousands of dollars and you know the type of people that you're generally employing, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Don't. They're public figures.
My mind goes to those stories of old veterans kind of trashing the next generation as to, well, after the show, they don't hang out at the bar. They go to their rooms and they play video games.
Right?
And,
yeah, I've been thinking about that quote for a while. I'm like, guys are cool.
I'm like, look, I get that there are a lot of great stories that start, I was drinking. But there are a lot of bad stories that happen, I was drinking. And so I have no problem with guys just saying, hey, this is my job. I like you guys, but I'm not going to come party with you. I'm going to go to my room, play a few games. You want to join me? Fine. I'm going to call my wife, see what you're up with her. And then I'm going to go to bed and I'm going to, cause I have a long road tomorrow to hit the next town. The Lance Storm chased stories appeal to me. I know that's weird, but it's like, did you party? No, not really. I just kind of went to bed, talked to my wife.
Other thing is WWE, I'm going to start with WWE here because I don't know the other organizations. WWE's alcohol versus marijuana and other drug policies, but specifically marijuana, creates an incentive structure where you are incentivized to go out and drink. And I think in terms of liability, but also in terms of, you know, performance issues, you'd be better off if everyone was going back to their hotel room and smoking some weed than having them go out and drink, because that's how you have the Usos with the DUI. That's how you have Jeff Hardy with the DUI. That's how you have so many people abusing pain pills and alcohol, because you could get suspended for like 90 days or something for smoking weed, but you can get a DUI and we'll just work it into a storyline.
Oh, we will get to that. But I think we'd be remiss if we did not praise the bravery of the people coming out with these stories, both male and female.
No, this is great. It's obviously not great, but it's a good thing.
Yeah, we've concentrated more on blasting the people who do these deeds. And I know that there have been a few other wrestling shows who have had other women and female guests come on and talk about this. But we haven't praised the people who have been brave enough with their story to come out. So I did want to end with that part of it because I felt like I was giving it short shrift.
I think it goes back to the power dynamic thing. And which is kind of my lens of viewing all this stuff is what makes these people so courageous and brave is that they are challenging power in an upward motion. You know, someone like David Starr had a bit of a strong fan following going on Twitter and in the wrestling community and coming out and telling people a story about David Starr that a lot of people probably didn't want to hear because they liked the guy. Not that they didn't want to believe it or were incapable of believing, but didn't want to hear because they liked him. It takes bravery to be able to come out there and speak that phrase, truth to power. This is what it looks like.
Yeah. So I think we should end there on this discussion.
I think we need to talk about Riddle, don't we?
Oh, okay. And that, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Because I was going to say, if we do it in SmackDown, it's going to seem weird, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. One of the allegations was on a road trip in a van that Riddle and a female wrestler / trainee, he forced her to have, he wanted to have sex. He more or less...
The other people in the car, if memory serves here, were sleeping. Riddle wanted to have sex. The other party did not want to have sex. And according to, if my understanding is right, correct me if I'm wrong here, he strangled her and then she gave him oral sex.
It was either that or he threatened to strangle her because who's gonna know? Type of thing.
Right.
And then in not giving her sex, thought that oral would relent. Yeah. And then of course WWE puts Riddle's debut on SmackDown instead of retaping something.
First they pulled the announcement.
Yeah.
From the website, which led all of us to believe, you and I are going to chat during the week here as these stories break, and it led us to believe, okay, so they're going to pull the Matt Riddle thing. And then they didn't pull the Matt Riddle thing.
Right.
And they just ran with it. I guess their argument is this is already in the can, but we are talking about a show that has been heinously underwritten and written within the last hour of it going to air on a regular basis for the last 3 to 5 years. So the idea that they couldn't abandon ship or abort the mission if they really believed they needed to, we've seen them do it before. And so when WWE chooses to go full steam ahead with angles like this, it makes you believe that there's like a statement being made.
Or a tone deafness. Just a general, yeah, we don't care what's going on.
Either it's tone deafness. Yes, it's one or the other. It's the we don't care. We're not obligated to, which is really weird. I think that Vince probably in his weird twisted mind thinks that this is quote unquote social issue stuff and that he doesn't need to care about this any more than he needs to care about, let's say, George Floyd protests or Black Lives Matter or something like that, but it completely misunderstands that this is not some sort of like deep United States based Me Too issue. This is an issue directly affecting a performer that you're putting through a major push right now, buddy. And you need to actually sit down and think about it not in the vacuum of politics, but in the vacuum of this is a top talent that you're presenting on TV.
Right. And oh man, what was I going to say on that? I had a point and I just lost it all of a sudden. Cause I was too busy thinking about my, I was going to basically say, look, if you didn't like our take on the entire thing, I'm a middle-aged white guy. I'm a bit out of touch on these things. I get it. I never had a Lothario period where I was getting laid. I didn't date all that much. I still haven't. It's one of those things where these types of situations, I don't have an expertise on them. Quite frankly, I just know bad behavior and I can point that out. And this Matt Riddle thing. I know the point I was going to make. I've talked myself back into it. Goes back into the detectives thing. It might be that they've investigated and found that there's something wrong with the allegation. Now, I'm not going to go that far to say that, but it might be in their minds. But this also goes to tone deafness. It doesn't matter what you found personally.
Then just pull him for a week or two.
Pull him for a week, yes. Until it all.
There is nothing that, I mean, if they stopped the Matt Riddle push this week, there is nothing the way WWE presents stuff right now where it would affect or hurt his career in any way, shape, or form, any more than starting or stopping an Apollo Crews push.
You could have written them off TV for a week. Have them off for a month
the way they do stuff on this show.
Get jumped coming out into the parking lot for his big debut. Let this either come to fruition as fact or not fact, and then go on with your plans. You don't need them right now. There's no crowds. There's no houses to build.
It's a full state. They are operating like looking for weird signals that aren't there and aren't going to be coming. And yet, to your point, you just stop. It's the same with Velveteen Dream. The allegations come up. You are doing shows in empty houses with paper audiences. Just stop. Just stop pushing him. Focus on Loomis. The baby face of 2020, stalker Dexter Loomis.
We don't need closure to this story just yet. The big Adam Cole Velveteen Dream feud. I mean, I still don't understand. Why did we need to go through that match and then do the follow-up the next week?
Yeah, I mean, this is a story that I think most people are about as invested in as, like, you know, Cole versus Tommaso Ciampa. You could have very easily moved Adam Cole onto something else.
Yeah.
Very easily.
What else before we go?
NXT UK, because like there are other people on that list. There's like Joe Coffey, Wolfgang was on.
Ligero's a Ligero. Big one.
And Ligero's responses on this stuff have been bad. Right. And I mean, it's not the only thing I calibrate against, but when there's an allegation and then someone comes out and their response is immediately bad, I can kind of clean up what I was trying to get at earlier here. When there's an allegation and the other person's response is just bad, like David Starr or Ligero, I kind of don't need to hear anything else.
Joey Ryan's like I know I'm a bad person, but I know I've taken advantage of people in the past. But it's Ligero's Twitter has gone down.
I don't know. I'm not qualified remotely to sit there and tell you what is and is not the right answer for something like this. I don't know. I'm not a PR firm. But all I can tell you is I see wrong answers on a fairly regular basis, and people should be taking note of what the wrong answer is. If there's a but in your sentence, that's probably the wrong tactic.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm a piece of crap, but I'm not a rapist. I'm like, well, how about you start with, I'm not a rapist, but I'm a piece of crap. You know?
Yeah.
It's still not as good. It's still not great.
If you truly believe the allegations are false, yes. I honestly don't need the person to go a whole lot further than, the allegations against me are completely false, and if you want to tack on I'm not perfect and my dating life is not filled with, like, you know, every moment is pure glory and pure nobility. I mean, sure. I actually don't think you need to include that, because if people are honest with themselves, they'd all kind of be able to admit that, like, they haven't exactly bathed themselves with glory in every single relationship they've ever been in. We've all ghosted somebody. We've all, you know, not we've all cheated on somebody, but everybody has done some sort of, like, not great behavior in the context of dating. It happens.
Because it's a learning process, and you are prone to do at least one dumb thing in your life.
Yeah, yeah. Or I mean, some people are just, you know, exploitative people. Not necessarily. Yeah, you know, like there's just lots of different things.
I'm going from my point of view versus the creep versus the evil point of view. The awkward point of view where it's like, okay, I asked a girl out, or I gave her a gift and made her uncomfortable, and there's a difference between that and evil shit. Okay, there it is.
No, for sure. Look, there are socially awkward people all the time. I have
go been to a women's wrestling show. You'll see lots of them.
Yeah, yeah, well, for sure. I have been socially awkward. I have also had advances made on me by socially awkward people. I would hope that most people are mature enough to know the difference between that. But even then, it's important to be mindful that like all this stuff can make people uncomfortable. Like there's lots of different ways one can be made uncomfortable.
Other names of notes with accusations within WWE and elsewhere: Dave Crist.
Dave Lagana.
He's gone from NWA. We forgot about him.
He's
had a bit of a history.
I don't know that he's always I have no animus towards the guy. I don't think it's the same. If memory serves, Dave has bitten less. He didn't love the Lucha the Hidden Temple show. Let's put it that way, Jeff.
Yeah. Dave's was more. It was, yeah, I don't want to talk about it because that whole note skeeved me out a bit, to be honest with you. Let's just say David Lagana is no longer with the NWA.
And I will say this. When we were talking about organizational problems with NWA, like this last year.
Cornette,
but the Cornette thing, they wanted to scapegoat everything on just purely Cornette. And I didn't want to let them off the hook on that.
Right.
Yeah.
The reason I said that is Cornette's had new allegations come out.
Oh, that's true. No, that's also true. Absolutely. And God, Cornette's are horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Geez Louise.
Cornette's on the list. Sid Scala, unfortunately, is on the list.
Oh, no. What are the allegations against Sid?
I don't have them in front of me right now.
No, I'm like learning about some of this stuff.
Wolfgang. Is on the list.
Yeah.
Joe Coffey, as we said. Leggero, Travis Banks, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate.
So like NXT UK is canceled.
Jordan Devlin is on the list.
Mark Coffey is going to be the new champion of NXT UK.
Well, Walter's not on there yet. I mean,
Look, I'm here for this Mark Coffey Walter angle.
I'm here for Kaylee Ray taking the title. And just saying, the hell with all the men. Give it to the woman and see what happens there. Because she's the baddest woman on the planet right now in terms of the WWE universe, other than maybe Aunt Pam. A lot more names, a lot of allegations out there. This is going to continue to ripple, quite frankly, because I think more people are going to lose their jobs. I don't know if denial will be a great strategy for people to try and hoard it off. I'm of the opinion, come clean and take your punishment and then go get help. But you don't need to advertise you getting help. Just go get it. Because...
Yeah, and just disappear for a while.
Yeah,
and
just go away for a while.
And then change.
Mark Halperin thing, where he didn't disappear. He just kind of waited a month and said, hey, I'd like my job in media back.
Yeah. Oh, no, or even worse, if we're going to go there, Matt Lauer.
Yeah, Matt Lauer. I know what it's like to have been, crucified by the mob. It's like, no.
I've been unfairly maligned. The cancel culture is coming for me.
Yeah, nobody at NBC ever got fired for any of that crap either, which kills me. It's just Matt Lauer has to go away for a while and then come back like nothing happened. Screw you. Take your medicine. Reap what you sow. Because if you deny, and then we find out it's true, it's going to be even worse. It's going to be worse. And I know some of these people are going to think they can outrun this stuff, but you can't. I mean, unless it's completely false, which is something I've dealt with, but it's rare.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it, 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, no, I have dealt with this. Well, we actually talked about it on the show here. I have dealt with this. It's not as though, like, look, I can, we talked about the person who claimed that I destroyed all of her belongings and I had to, like, put up pictures and she deleted her GoFundMe or whatever. Like, it's not that everyone's always honest all the time, especially not in relationships. So I'm not naive on this, but look, there's a ring of truth, and I don't want to sound like, oh God, who's the guy? Which justice said, "I know pornography when I see it."
Oh, that's Potter.
Potter, yeah, Wendell Potter. I always go Brennan, but it's not Brennan; it's Potter. Yeah, Wendell Potter. Yeah, like I'm not like the ring of truth, man. I don't. It's a feeling.
Wait,
it's mood.
I'm wrong on that. Oh, it's Potter Stewart.
Potter Stewart. Okay, not Wendell Potter. Potter Stewart. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. No. I. My brain for a long time.
There was a Potter in there. I just. You know,
I
know my SCOTUS. Come on.
I like me some SCOTUS talk. But yeah. No. Like, look. The ring of truth. You can tell when someone is being honest with their denial. You can tell when someone's hiding the ball with something. You can tell, like in the case of Cornette, Joey Janela, who maybe has credibility issues, but he was kind of blowing the whistle on the Jim Cornette party thing back in March of this year. So, like, if some of these things have been hanging around for a while as rumors, and then those rumors become more substantiated, that to me has the ring of truth. If an allegation comes out and a performer comes out and says something that sounds ridiculous, that to me means that the allegation has the ring of truth. Like, the ring of truth, it's a little bit conceptual, it's a little bit abstract, it's a little bit feels over reels, but like, I don't know, man, you gotta just kind of take your life experience, your experience of when people have been telling the truth and not been telling the truth in the past, and, you know, kind of hopefully some road wisdom acquired along the way here, and think your way through some of these allegations. But most of them, 85-90% of them, are going to be true, because it takes so much courage to come out and actually lobby these allegations. Or conversely, tons and tons and tons of money. But that's not what's going on with any of these.
And there is the, I mean, I don't like talking about this a lot, but I was a victim of sexual abuse as a very, very young child. And you repress that stuff. And then sometimes it just, I mean, like, it came up in my 30s when I started going to therapy for anger. And you know, I had a temper and I had a short fuse and I was frustrated. And yeah, I'd almost forgotten about it. It was always on my mind, but it was every single memory you had. I had one neighbor who beat the crap out of me, and I had another who basically raped me. And it was one of those things where I had forgotten half of that equation. And just sometimes you just need a trigger to remember things. And it takes a lot of nerve and courage. Nerve sounds negative. Courage to openly talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, anger is really weird, right? This is like way off the beaten path of wrestling talk, but I assume everyone tuned in today not to hear so much about the results of SmackDown. More here.
I mean,
our thoughts on this.
For me, it was I tried dating after a long layoff of not trying, and I got humiliated by someone in public, and that just set me off. And it because I have other things that being humiliated just brings up, but it was just one of those things where I bottle stuff in, and I just,
right.
That got me in. And it's like, look, I need some help. I did for a number of years. I took antidepressants. And then that eventually led into, you know, religion and things like that. But, you know, I didn't announce anything. I didn't try and, get a position at a theater back that I previously had at that time. It was, you know, it was.
What I'm saying, or what I was saying, is that I think when you have anger, or you identify that you are particularly angry, and that can be. Anger is going to manifest in a lot of different ways. As someone who you've dealt with anger issues, I have dealt with anger issues. I could even say I'm still dealing with anger issues to a certain extent. Although
it's an ongoing thing, it never goes away.
Yeah, no, it never goes away. But like, dude, I'm so much less angry now than I was like even 5 years ago. Yeah. I listen to like old shows of me, and like I've made good progress looking inward and actually thinking about what's going on with the anger. And what I was going to say is that anger is like always a secondary emotion. And they'll teach you this stuff in therapy, but like what that means is that whatever is making you angry is it is some secondary function, usually of fear or sorrow, but there's a primary emotion that's underpinning it that is manifesting in anger. And it can be as a male, but like I see just as many angry women. So anger is not like distinct to any one gender or whatever.
No, but it is the most easily accessible emotion as I was taught in acting. And that's you don't want to watch scenes of people being angry with each other all the time. Someone has to relent at some point to another emotion, because watching people be angry with each other is uncomfortable, but it's also an easy choice to make because all you have to do is rage the whole time. You don't have to have any emotional investment other than anger in it.
And so I think it doesn't play well on the screen or even on the radio in particular. I know some people like rage radio or whatever, but like, I don't think it plays particularly well for any length of time.
What's your hot takes on backlash?
Yeah. Right. I mean, wrong again, Hawkins. I don't think it plays particularly well on those, in those dynamics, because usually, because it's a veil, anger is always a veil for the other thing that's going on. So when we see two people on the screen just yelling at each other, we know that they're not purely at rage with one another. Or if they were, even if they were yelling at each other and then started punching each other, odds are there's something that underpins that. Like, well, you just hit my girlfriend with a beer bottle. And yes, I'm angry about it, but really what's actually underpinning, you know, my rage here, my anger, is that I'm concerned and distressed that, you know, the person I'm with has now a giant welt on her head, is bleeding from her skull, and she's crying, and this is all very upsetting and distressing to me, and you disrespected her. And all of that sums up into anger. But the more interesting thing in terms of acting, and also the more honest thing in terms of being a person, is to actually explore all those other things that are going on there. Because, you know, what you are is concerned. You're concerned and you're afraid. You obviously don't want more injury to befall your partner. And that's all manifesting in a form of rage versus, you know, like no one just starts off angry, right? Like anger always has to be motivated.
Mm-hmm. So that's it's a free therapy session for everybody, guys. So everybody come together, give a group hug. We're not going to go
explore your anger, guys. Explore. Why are you so angry?
Because WWE is terrible programming.
laughter is good too.
Yeah.
Learn to laugh.
Also in the news, SmackDown tapings shut down. Actually, all tapings shut down because a PC trainee came in testing positive for COVID.
Positive for COVID after they went off site and got a test elsewhere. And I think that's really important here. I'm in the setup, not you know, dogging you here, because I think it speaks to this issue that WWE has had staring them in the face that we've been covering for months here, which is that they are not taking the coronavirus seriously. And time and again, WWE as an organization has been downplaying the risks of COVID, trying to find ways to where the laws of biology and virology don't really apply to them, do the bare minimum to kind of keep things going. There's been some allegations that politics has even been involved in them still being able to run in Florida at this point. And I mean, you know, you're hearing going into these tapings that Vince didn't want people to have masks on because he didn't like the way the masks looked. The spit glass thing, not a bad idea, but then he's got everyone standing in there and socially distancing, and they go, oh, we're doing testing. But the thing is, with a lot of the tests, as we know, the tests are not 100% accurate. The best tests, I think, are only 90% accurate, which means that 9 out of 10 of them work, which means 1 out of every 10 might not work. And if you're going to have 30 to 50 people on site, which, you know, if you're thinking about who's in the audience, plus who's serving as the camera crew and who's serving as the announce team, even look at the way some of these things are shot backstage. Even if you had 90% effective tests, the odds of failure are pretty darn high once you're getting above 40 to 50 people on site.
There's a couple other factors to play in here as well. This was the first week where it was not just trainees at the Performance Center, but certain fans. And they were told they weren't pressured to wear masks at the tapings. Also on site for the tapings, Ric Flair, who is in his 70s, who... Look, they've done a pretty good job of keeping Jerry Lawler away, save for that first week where he's kind of, you know, he's flying on a plane and coming out there. Now we have Ric Flair out there. Vince is in his 70s.
The Ric Flair thing's really inexplicable, but again, gets back to blind spot stuff where it's like, I know that this organization values Ric Flair. Like, I know that he matters to Triple H as a human being. I know that people care about Ric Flair working for WWE. They are just so blind spotted on the severity of COVID-19 that they think that it's a good idea to have Ric Flair come in here just to do a little guest spot. Because the worst part about this is it's not as though this was essential characterization that Ric Flair was really offering to Charlotte.
Oh, jeez. Or even to Christian.
Right. Yeah, also true. If anything, Ric Flair's insertion into the Christian angle was really non sequitur.
Unless they're going to do some stable with Randy Orton and Charlotte, which I don't see Flair being a week-to-week character as something, but I'm
he has a hard time with dialogue at this stage, and sometimes it's hard to understand what Rick's saying.
He's still a bigger star than anybody on this roster, so it just sucks away from making people bigger stars than they already are, but that wasn't the point I wanted to get to. The point I wanted to get to is, look, Flair has worked for Vince. Everybody who's worked for Vince knows that Vince doesn't believe in illness. He believes, you know, it's weakness and not having control over your body and stuff like that. I don't even think it's just COVID stuff. I think it's just Vince.
No, I think this is deeper. No, this is what I'm saying. It's not, I think one would be wrongheaded to assume that it's like a knee-jerk reaction to politics. It's deep. It's like the stuff that Dark Order and Mr. Brody Lee's character is ribbing Vince on. Vince has these very weird pet theories about the world.
Too many people dismiss it as, oh, well, Vince and Trump are friends, but Vince isn't the kind of person to have friends. He has people he can use at any certain point.
And they're similar in the sense that they both have pet theories. Yeah. Like, you know, Donald Trump has the thing about thinking that the human being energy is like a battery and that you've only got a finite amount of stuff. And in this sense, they're similar, but it's not like he's picking it up from Trump. It's just Vince is like this too.
Yeah. Many people are, you know, it's just, hey, listen to the stories of people who have worked there for years who, you know, if somebody sneezed in a room that they get yelled at for it and you just kind of go, okay.
Or Vince eating a massive steak and sort of, you know, just eating it with his bare hands and not having, you know, like,
he doesn't
weird.
Want to be caught eating either.
Yeah, right. Doesn't want to be caught eating. But when he does eat, he eats weird stuff.
Yeah.
And he eats weirdly.
Steak and ketchup wraps.
Yep.
But yeah, and then they just went back to the, well, see, that might play into why they didn't cut the Riddle part either, so.
What, they don't see a problem with that? Or
that they didn't have time to reshoot anything.
Yeah, I guess. But you could always, I mean, worst comes to worst, you could always take it live.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, like, there's really, the whole weird audience dynamic that WWE is insisting on right now is entirely artificial. If they needed to, they could just tape a good match and have commentary, put it over and be energetic about it. And I would rather them do that and do the right thing. And if it means that we don't have a fake audience for the week, or if they really need to, you know, punch it in, sweeten in the audience, if you guys really think that's going to make the difference. I'd rather them do that than do the wrong thing or start with a Matt Riddle push that's utterly ill-advised and have to hit the abort button on it a week from now.
Not going to go too deep into the graps, I guess, because it's not as important. But we are NWA fans, and we did go on to the Lagana thing. But our boy Ricky Starks made his AEW debut, and he is now a part of the roster. I thought the match was good. I thought the promo wasn't. I thought he didn't come off as big a star as he did in NWA, and that just might be that his charisma carries a bit harder on the more intimate setting. But
it's a look thing. I think Ricky needs to update the presentation a little bit.
A little more classy
even.
Yeah.
Like Ricky Starks, I want to see him in button ups and slacks and stuff. He doesn't need to be like Hollywood, but like
he does videos of himself, like almost like 80s style type things with like almost the Leo Rush thing. Yeah.
I don't need him to go full Zicky Dice, but like, I think him, you know, he should be a Johnny Cool guy. And right now he's being a Johnny Cena, and I need him to hip it up a little bit.
Yeah. I the match was really good with Cody.
I agree.
Yeah. I'm agreeing with you. I'm trying to figure out though. I don't need him to be MJF obnoxious, but I need him to be a bit more obnoxious because it's obvious that's the gimmick.
Yes. Yeah. He's a little too much of a, you know, it was weird. Okay. To that point, what's weird about that dynamic then is you have like Cody and Stark squaring off, and it's like Cody is slowly going heel.
Yeah.
And Starks is supposed to kind of be a heel too. And so it was an interesting dynamic in that match.
Yeah.
Not bad.
The only other real big thing, I mean, I'm a little frustrated with this tag team feud thing because I just think it makes the Revival look not like the powerhouses that I think they should be coming off as. They just look like another team in a four-way. I loved the Britt Baker thing. I thought that was absolutely fantastic with her passing notes during the Abaddon Anna Jay. That broad needs to find Jesus. I laughed my ass off on that one.
She's so funny. I actually kind of like what they're doing with Dark Order still. Mm-hmm. Like they're just kind of like in the background. I think picking up Anna Jay here this first week was a slick move. They could
especially
use
after the baby face, because she went from heel to baby face, did the baby face kind of personality profile, and now she's going to be reestablished as a heel. I kind of dig that.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree too. I think it's totally fine. I don't like the reestablished that I don't like is what's going on with QT Marshall and Allie. I just don't. It doesn't add anything to me. The Brandi Rose Allie dynamic is not particularly interesting. And I just, it's just there. You know what I liked though? I liked this MJF versus Billy Gunn match.
Yeah. I dug it.
This is a good match. I kind of a classic story. Billy looks good. I like MJF trying to chop down the tree. I like Billy making some mistakes, but they kept Billy looking fairly strong here. He even had the part where he hit the Famouser, but just couldn't quite get over to MJF for the pin. So like the things that they did is Billy made mistakes here along the way, or MJF did just enough to keep himself from losing, which I think is MJF's matches are well formatted in that he always shows enough ass to keep the baby face that he's up against looking strong and credible.
Right. There's two spots in here, because this goes into my other final point on AEW that I didn't like. I'm a little over the MJF does something to a bigger guy, poses but backs up into him and kind of takes the it's funny once. You got to take that out of the repertoire for a while for it to be funny again, because he did that with Luchasaurus. He did that with someone else as well. The whole
there has to be different plays on it, right? Yeah. So he backs up, he realizes that the big guy's behind him, mm-hmm. and this time he tries to turn around like what Shorty G did, Chad Gable did to Mojo Rawley on SmackDown. Like, only you have MJF as the heel turn around and try to pop Billy Gunn in the face, and Billy Gunn just catches the hand. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are lots of interesting ways to spice up some of these beats. But, you know, MJF, I think, is still growing in the ring, too. He seems like a real student of the game.
And I need a little bit less of Aubrey. I get that the referee is part of the show. She's become a little bit too much of the show for me.
I watched her in an interview, or like I saw like a quote from her from one of these interviews where she was like, I wouldn't have been able to be what I wanted to be in the ring if I was in WWE. And to that I say, I don't think you need to quote unquote have as much personality. Like that's not actually what people want out of their referees. Red Shoes Ohno is a really good example. It's not like the way they've gimmicked him up over the last like 7-8 years here, but the way he was presented all the way up to, let's say, 2013, he would have an occasional comedy beat, not like Earl Hebner or whatever, but like most of the time you just knew Red Shoes because he was the good, competent, steady hand.
I'll give you another example. I'll give you Tommy Young. I love Tommy Young as a referee. He's probably my favorite referee to watch, but he only did the Tommy Young personality spot with Ric Flair in big matches with Ric Flair, or on house shows with Ric Flair, where, you know, Flair's hanging onto the rope and he kicks the hand off of the rope, and then they get in like the shoving match and he shoves Flair down for the comedy spot. That's the only time he did that. He never did that with any other heel. He never did that with any other babyface. Just Ric Flair in big time Ric Flair matches. And that's the only time I want something like that to happen. I don't want it every week in a match where someone, where Aubrey does something and then the heel gets in her face and things like that.
Yeah. You know who had a lot of personality, Jeff, is Nick Patrick. You know, I don't need this. I'll give you one more great example. Here's what I need. I need Bronco Lubitsch. I just need someone struggling their ass off to get down to those three
guys. Oh, we need
that's 60, characterization.
65-year-old who has to get on all fours to count and then count slow as molasses.
Oh. One of the greatest referees of all time.
Now I'm hurt and abused. I can't.
So Aubrey, I want you to study the greats. Take it from your old pal Novi.
Little Nate has personality, but he doesn't always show.
Absolutely. He does. No, what he does, it's the facials and stuff. So like when there's like punches and stuff, like he kind of mini sells.
She is great at that too. I'm going to give the devil her due. And I've seen, you know, there was a Sunny Kiss match where she and him did a choreography thing to his music. I get that. It's fun for the indies type of thing. But yeah, like, she's great at facials and reacting to matches and things. I like that part of it. It's just here's the Aubrey spot thing every week.
It's moving into Hebner territory.
Yeah.
It's the way that Hebner in TNA became.
Oh, when he chewed scenery, when
yes,
I'm the authority here and point to his patch and threaten to throw him out. Yeah. That whole
thing. And she's moving into those impulses, the Hebner Patrick territory. And I just can't, I'm not on board with that. I like my referees a little more muted, just because, like, look, this is not like comedy. It's a world where you have these two bombastic characters, and the referee's supposed to be the anchor, the straight man, the anchor to reality, the person that reminds us, oh yeah, this is supposed to be a sporting event. Even though this guy came out dressed up like he's from 1982, and this other person comes out like he lives in a crypt. You have a normal sporting official in the ring. It also helps increase the dichotomy, right? So, like, when someone like Abaddon comes out, I want the referee almost a little mortified by Abaddon, not too much, but like trying to keep a straight face, but going like, whoa, this is really weird. This person's very different. Is she a zombie? Again, not hamming it up too much, but they are the anchor to normalcy that we have. So when the referee wants to get in on the zany, then nothing anchors us back to normalcy.
Yeah, like Rick Knox would get into things on PWG as well, and you're just kind of like, okay. I want the happy medium between faceless, nameless guy that WWE does, which I think is too far to one end, and then Hebner on the other. I want that happy medium spot where it's like, okay, you can do a spot in a big match. You know, like I think the John Cone thing, is that his name?
Yeah.
This week, I thought that wasn't bad. They've done a couple of
spots with him, and they don't do it. They don't overdo it with him.
Yeah.
They did another really weird angle with him. I can't remember it right now.
They did the Nia Oscar rematch this week where they accused him of doing a fast count after getting shoved by Nia.
Yeah, there's that, but there's another one where he like made like some sort of ruling or like a referee. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
I remember what you're talking about, and then they basically did it for the website and nothing else, and then it kind of got dropped. That's weird.
So like there's a happy medium, and I get what Aubrey is saying, that you know a referee wants to be able to have a little bit more room to do some degree of characterization. I almost think that then to that point, referees, if they want to be more part of the plot stuff, need to be part of the backstage office. So like if we're doing NXT here, the referees, the head official hangs out with William Regal and they have some sort of dynamic together.
Quality control of the referees, and the head referee is doing quality control under him.
Yeah, exactly. And they can even have a relationship. You know what I mean? Like you can the same way that like Sid Scala and Johnny Saint had a relationship. I think that could be really interesting. Have Aubrey, you know, have some sort of not like a romantic relationship, but like, just, you know, an interpersonal relationship where they rib each other and they have some sort of dynamic. And, you know, I would honestly just keep it light. Don't make it too much of the plot point, but you could do something with them and give them some additional characterization. I just don't know that it needs to happen in the ring. I think it can happen backstage.
Ice cold thoughts on Backlash, which is a week out now. I thought it was mostly good. I know a lot of people had an issue with Street Profits and Viking Raiders in the Tozawa Ninja spot. I thought Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre was better than it had a right to be. I loved that match. I loved MVP in it. I think MVP is fantastic as a heel manager.
I agree.
Because he talks trash to the opponent. And he cheerleads for his guy. I thought the ending of that match was Drek, even though I called it in the preview of Lana coming down and, oh, you cheated, whatever. MVP calling her a thought the next night. Oh, my goodness. I thought that was going to be problematic for the week, but then we got into this other stuff. Orton versus Edge, good match. Was not the greatest match ever, but they did the thing where I opined what would happen if we actually piped in cheers and stuff like that, and that made it weird.
I hated that. Apparently this is a division point. I am firmly on the I absolutely hated the piped in noise. And like look at the runtime on this. Nearly 45 minutes.
Good Lord.
45 minutes. I watched this and like look, it, there is definitely great wrestling going on in here. I'm gonna say great wrestling because there are sequences and stuff that are great, crisp. Edge and Orton could go
great acting too. There was some great acting in here with Edge especially.
But if this was tightened down to 25 minutes from 45 minutes, I think you've got a great wrestling match. At 44 minutes, it seemed indulgent to me. And you could tell at various points, people had time to catch a breather. Randy's not great at maintaining a level of exhaustion throughout, so there were times where he just seemed fresher than other times in the match, kind of inexplicably. I just thought it overstayed its welcome. I hate when the audience is chanting, "This is awesome." Especially like
Fight Forever, when you know, 45 minutes in.
Yeah, right. No, Fight Forever. And I'm like, no, actually, I'd rather you didn't, pal. Go home. Go home. Go home.
You kids and your short attention spans. Why, back in my day, Ric Flair would do a 60-minute main event every night and twice on Sundays.
I mean, yeah, but the gimmick for a lot of that stuff is you do different stuff, and it's tough to really justify a 45-something minute match. It's really hard to get. Yes, you can make a match go that long,
unless you make an exhaustion a part of the story.
Right, and like you and I talk about this in offline, but I'm a big fan of the idea that in a long form match, I expect it to slow down a little bit. I expect them to fire up towards the end here when they get that second wind. And I want the slop. I want the exhaustion. I want the fatigue. I like
you
want the idea.
Like a fight. You like?
Yes, this is a siege. It's. Why are there 12 rounds in a boxing match? Not because we expect round 9 to be as crisp as round 3, but specifically because we expect a breakdown and a fatigue by the time we get to round 9. That's where the intrigue is.
It's where the drama is. And that's, yeah, why, that's why everybody loves the, not everybody, most people of discerning taste love the Steamboat Flair matches, because it's just chop and chop and chop and kick and kick and kick and going around the ring and chopping the hell out of each other. And then 25 minutes in, you just see them both, you know, blistered and bloody and battered. And now it's like, okay, now who's gonna have the fortitude to win this match? And then you start to get on the edge of your seat watching. Whereas for me, a lot of indie style is big move, wait a second, kind of sell it for a second, go back full speed, full speed, full speed, full speed, catch somebody with a move, kick out, catch somebody with a move, kick out, you know, finisher, 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 catch someone with a move, pin. And I just, it's to me, it's not as fun.
No, I agree. I think that we were joking about doing a debate about pain thresholds and the death of kayfabe as the premise of this week's show here. This is your Dan Le Batard tribute commentary here. But yeah, I think that there is a better way to work a long form match that exemplifies exhaustion and selling and making sure that people understand that they're like different wrestlers have different levels of pain, and that different moves hurt more than others. And a lot of times it's just, well, let's get to this next offense spot. And the conceit there is, hey, we're wrestling. This is all fake, or it worked. And therefore none of this stuff hurts all that bad. I want to believe that that move might've actually scrambled his eggs a little bit.
Yeah. Anything else on Backlash? I think the only real down point was Asuka Nia Jax being a double count out. I just didn't understand that at all. I don't understand protecting Nia like that, but you know, I don't mind double count outs sometimes. I think it's one of those things where we haven't made enough use of count out losses and wins sometimes.
No, I'm just really done with the Nia Jax story. Like, Nia Jax and Asuka is not a feud that I have any interest in seeing. So I don't hate it if I thought if I thought Nia was worth protecting and keeping looking strong. I guess from the WWE organizational sense, we want to keep Nia looking strong, but golly, to have matches, to have a great match with who?
So as for the television shows, we're not going to go blow by blow on these things. I don't think we've spent enough time today talking, but all three products, Red Show, Blue Show, Black and Yellow Show, felt like Bruce Pritchard shows. Bruce doesn't like as much wrestling as he does character interaction type of segments. Felt like there was a lot of that across the board. Next week, we're getting a celebratory toast by Sheamus to Jeff Hardy. God.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about that. So this is offensive on at least two different levels, right? Jeff's a recovering alcoholic, and we're making light of the fact that Jeff, you know, has problems with abuse.
But the story is that he's recovered, not that he's in recovery, but that he's
in recovery. But also, depending on which promo you're listening to, he's still got these problems that they could come back at any time.
Yeah.
And so therefore, Irish McSheamus, the drinky drunk guy, because in Ireland they drink so much, he's going to show up with the pint, because you see in Ireland they love drinking because they drink over there in Ireland because they're the drinky McDrunk guys.
Yeah.
I mean, to your point, I do have to believe that on a certain level, it really is just organizational tone deafness. It's not to excuse it, but I don't think they hate Sheamus. I don't think they're trying to make some sort of statement about Ireland being a land of heavy drinkers. I think that in this organization of WWE, they don't even realize that this is the stereotype they're trading in.
Highlight for me of the week across the board was Aunt Pam and her sassy friend. Bailey and Sasha were fantastic this week.
They're so funny on commentary, aren't they? Oh yeah, no, they're great. They're great in every outing. And heel Bailey, keeps getting better and better. But I almost don't want the ride with her and Sasha to end.
Yeah,
I want them to have a fake out of them having a blow up the first time and then keep it going a little bit longer than the second time they actually had the blow up.
My one acting note to her would be, don't be obnoxious from point one. Don't work your way into it. She did it on the Raw promo, I think, because it was birthday week. So she was really trying to be serious for that for a second before she made the obnoxious reveal. God, the birthday cake and the hair is peak obnoxious, and I loved it. I thought the match on Wednesday with Shotzi and Tegan Nox went rather well. I thought they led them through. I mean, Shotzi had some initial shakiness there, but after that, it became a pretty nice story, I thought.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, Bailey and Sasha kid.
Workhorses, yes, both of them.
They can, and Tegan's good, too.
Yeah.
So when you've got three of the four participants who are good quality hands, they can guide the fourth participant here, Shotzi, to a good, well-worked match.
Shotzi's on. We've slagged,
okay,
Shotzi a bit. When Shotzi's smooth, when she has it going, she's very good. It's hit or miss sometimes.
I'm looking forward to seeing this smooth Shotzi match.
In its entirety.
Yeah. No, I await with bated breath.
Okay. They just brought her out for that tag team match on SmackDown to be obnoxious on the mic, and I loved it. I didn't understand the point of it, but okay. Other than it was a nice – I actually liked that Sasha got the win over Nikki Cross. I did. I think.
No, okay, so that's important, cheating, right? So the whole reason I think they need to do that is because they need to exhibit that Bailey, when she finally decides that Sasha is the weak link, is utterly wrong about this. So I expect a booking pattern that's going to kind of go, Sasha picks up wins mostly, Bailey mostly dumps wins. And then they maybe pull it together in these tag matches, but Sasha's actually going to be the one that's kind of carrying them as a tag team.
I'm good with that. I mean,
I think that's right.
On this story, I liked the three-way a little bit more than some people on Sunday. I thought certain parts of that match were rough, but a lot of it was smoother than I expected it to be. I kind of like the Iconics' involvement in this, but I'd like to get them. I wish there were another babyface team to put in here, because having the Iconics in here makes it a little weird, because I love the Iconics' reformed badassness, but if they're playing up flaws in all three of these teams' friendship, which it seems like they might be doing, because the Alexa Nikki post-match was kind of like, yeah, you're the weak link here. And it seems like Billy and Peyton have a weak link story going on as well. That's kind of been buried for a little bit. That'll probably rear its head again.
Yeah, no, it seems like the Iconics are the one that are most cohesive right now, but there's definitely...
But they're also the ones that have the most chance of breaking up immediately.
Right, yeah, but Bliss also does seem to be, like, arms-lengthing and deferring back to her heel mode here, ultimately.
It's like Apollo Crews is on his way to yet another possible heel turn. They kind of teased this before with MVP, and now they kind of did it again with him putting the arm around the rope. But it was the babyface giving the heel what the heel was trying to do type of thing.
Yeah, he's going like tweener-ish. Kind of like there's an analogy between him and like Cody Rhodes arc right now. Charlotte,
depending on the week.
Yeah, okay, but I think it's a little bit more steady characterization a la Cody.
That's the other thing I liked. I liked Io Shirai's interaction with Sasha and Bayley. I'll take those two matches any day of the week, please.
Absolutely. No, I'm into that. Damian Priest defeating Killian Dane. Don't have a ton to say about that. Priest just doesn't do much for me. I it's so weird to have Dane. Killian Dane, they built him up at one point here, but my God, they've done nothing with the guy.
The whole, my God, my tires are slashed. I want to call him Trevor Lee. What's his name again?
Killian Dane?
No, Trevor Lee.
Trevor Lee. Cameron Grimes.
Cameron Grimes. The whole get the guy, call you an Uber, evil thing while speeding off, and him being in the background as Priest comes in with his car. It was well executed. It's just a little mustache twirly for me.
Yeah, right. And I don't really think they earned the Cameron Grimes, Damian Priest animus thing because they were like kind of boys. It's like,
I remember last week he came out after taking credit or like he basically was slagging Damian Priest's loss against Finn Balor at TakeOver.
Right. Right. No, I remember that. It's just that came out of nowhere. Like, it was a weird thing for Grimes to do that last week. And, anyways. Other weird things on this show. Robert Stone. I hate this Robert Stone gimmick.
Oh, the puking spot was
puking. Well, everyone's a drunk now on the show, Jeff. Everyone's got an alcohol problem.
Yeah,
They know how to remain, one angle.
They always remain in a state of the character as they were the previous week. So it's not that Robert Stone got drunk one week, went home, got himself cleaned up and might be a little bit sad or a little bit on edge. No, he's come back and he's still drunk.
He's on a bender for the last week.
It's a lost weekend.
It's a lost seven days.
He's Bill Holden in Sunset Boulevard all of a sudden. What is he?
The Robert Stone brand is a rolling blackout. Kai defeats Caden Carter. I don't like having Caden in this spot. And it's just like, I guess my issue with the women's division right now is all these new names feel really cold. They don't
KC
have
getting lawn darted. I thought it was hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. That was funny. Bronson Reed versus Leon Ruff. I mean, who believes that Bronson Reed's going to beat Karrion Kross? So
nobody, but Ruff. Nobody. Ruff is a great, great addition to this roster.
I like him. I'm a fan.
He can keep losing, but he's going to get that one win, and it should be a big one, and hopefully they follow up on it, because that seems to be the story they're going to go with here.
It'll be fun. He beats Keith Lee. Because you'd almost not believe it. But he has like a 1-2-3 kid sort of odd Razor Ramon moment against Keith Lee.
I think he wins the Cruiserweight title. That's how I would do it, but that's me. I mean,
yeah. I just think that's too easy. If you want to book a guy as a real underdog, have him beat a heavyweight, an established heavyweight, and also someone who can take it in stride versus want revenge. Because, like, let's say it was like Karrion Kross, then you'd expect Karrion Kross to be on the warpath to massacre Leon Ruff, and you'd have no way of getting off of that ramp. Whereas I think Keith Lee could drop the title of Leon Ruff and actually be happy for this guy that this guy was the better man. It works a little bit better with the babyface.
Yeah, I like Phantasma.
I don't like him as Santos Escobar.
I don't like him as Santos Escobar, and I don't like, because we've talked about this before, how WWE does stables is you have the one guy and you have cannon fodder, but the problem is the two young guys are the guys that need the wins here. And I don't, you need to establish Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde as guys, and I don't think they have that in them.
Maverick's also the wrong type of baby face to be going up against a faction, because like what would normally need to happen is like Drake would need to go Stone Cold Drake Maverick on these guys.
He's gonna need to find friends, and the friends are gonna be the ones that are gonna get over versus Drake Maverick.
Right. Yes. If you want to keep the story focused on Drake, it's hard because if he gets friends, he would still need to have those friends. He would need to be the most capable of the friends. So you would need like Drake Maverick and Leon Ruff and some third person, where Drake Maverick's still the big name here and Drake gets the pin over Phantasma.
Babatunde comes out and just squashes them all.
Yeah, Jake Atlas. I mean, you could probably, you know.
It's going to be Atlas. Like, Atlas is going to, because that was the guy who came and picked him up, although I want him to turn on
them. I want him to turn so bad. Are we bad people? Is that what this means?
No, we're not.
I feel like plot and narrative really dictates that Jake Atlas is the ultimate heel here.
It's just Drake Maverick as mini Sting, where everybody just turns on him eventually. I'm kind of here for it.
I'm kind of here for, especially if it means that Drake Maverick, you know, like if it leads to matches and Drake Maverick has to go through this string of people, like you're playing Mortal Kombat 2 and you're trying to beat it on, you know, medium or hard mode. You got that big long mountain to climb. I'm fine with Drake Maverick getting his comeuppance.
I didn't bring this up, but I'll end with this. Tozawa is a fantastic second for this big ninja guy. His facials are fantastic, but Tozawa's the most talented part of this ninja package. And unfortunately, he's going to be the one taking the falls, I think, because I would have liked.
Who is the big ninja?
I'd rather have Big Show.
Who's playing the big ninja? I haven't looked this up.
I had his name. I'll look it up. Riff a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Like, look. It's hard for me to get really upset about Tozawa in this package, and here's why. Because if we're worried about stereotypes in Tozawa, I mean, fundamentally, the Street Profits gimmick is a stereotypes gimmick. Fundamentally, the Viking Raiders gimmick is a stereotypes gimmick. You wouldn't be able to, not that you wouldn't be able to, because of course you could. You could totally have Angelo Dawkins be into Viking stuff. There's no rules about that. But WWE, because of their implicit biases, because of their tone deafness, would never, ever, ever in 1,000 years cast Angelo Dawkins as a Viking Raider, nor would they ever cast in 1,000 years Ro as a member of the Street Profits.
A black cowboy, that's wacky.
Yeah, right. No, precisely. So there's certain, it's like the same thing with Sheamus, and not seeing that you are making Sheamus play Irish McDrunky Pants, the fighting Irish guy who likes to drink and fight. It's that myopia.
The name of the giant ninja is Jordan Omagbahin, or Omagbahin. 7'3", which, you know, I do like little guy, big guy dynamics. So Tozawa, but the big guy is going to be Vince's project. He's going to, look how tall he is. My God. And then, you know, he'll get the win over Big Show. And then basically it'll eventually be, he turns on Tozawa. We know this story. We've seen it 8 million times. So,
I mean, among other things, like that's the problem. The lack of any sort of creativity with Tozawa is a problem. And like it goes back to our steady and sustaining critique of the way Japanese talent has been presented on WWE television that you and I have had for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now, going all the way back to Shinsuke Nakamura. Some of this stuff, I get why people were upset. I understand all of that, but some of these problems are just simply not there. It's not new anger for me. It's the best way I can put it. This is just, I wouldn't say I've been beaten into expecting this or accept it. Certainly not accepting it. But golly, I don't expect Vince's brain or heart to change based on us doing a strongly worded podcast.
So a lot of heavy stuff this week. Let's end it there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can just follow the show at ShakeThemRopes. Chris, plug your stuff.
Yeah, so my other show is called Don't Worry About the Government. You can go and check that out over at don'tworry.tv. We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/DWATG. Go and check that out. There's premium content, new episodes coming out. I'm going to be taping a couple more this week here. Also, I've got a little bit of an informational campaign going. So if you're interested in information, you can find out who your district attorney is. All you have to do is hit me up on Twitter at Christo Vimbrino or at DWATG. Say, you know, who is my DA. Give us your town. I will tell you who your district attorney is and when they're up for re-election and give you some quick thoughts on it and let you take it from there.
See you next week, kids.